Good afternoon, good morning, good evening. Welcome to another All About Windows Phone Insight podcast. I'm Ewan Spence, and it's a rather big day. So let's go round the usual suspects on the podcast. We have Steve Litchfield in Reading.
Hello there. It's quite late in the day, but I gather it's quite early in the day. Well, middle of the day for one of our other hosts.
Indeed, yes. And Steve completely spoils all the tension I was going to build up. But there you go. Sorry. We have David Gilson in Hull.
Hello, yes. Hello, I'm here. And it's been a very long day for all of us, but we're dedicated. We want to get stuff to everyone who follows us. So we're doing a podcast now very late at night in the UK.
Well, you say that. It's like 9 p.m. here. But of course, Rafe, what time is it there?
It's 4:09 here in New York, and I've literally just stepped out of the Nokia event that's been taking place, walked down the High Line and come back to the hotel to get on the Wi-Fi to record this podcast.
Yeah, so there we go. We are going international over Scotland and England and America and wherever Hull is. And we're here really just to talk about the Lumia 820 and 920, announced today by Stephen Elop, seen by many as Nokia's big gamble, the phones that are going to make or break the company. Very briefly, Rafe, is that hyperbole or is this really Nokia's all-in moment?
It's easy to boil it down to just, you know, one moment and say it's a gamble. I don't think it's quite that simple. It's never going to be about one event, but there's no doubting that this is a really big moment for Nokia. You know, they launched their first Windows phone devices, and if we're honest, they were kind of off the shelf. You know, it was impressive they got them out in 6 months. Now we're 18 months down the road, and in a way, these are, you know, the first Windows phone devices that Nokia's had a long time to work on. You know, so in a real sense, it's their first Windows phone devices. And of course, it's their first Windows Phone 8 devices. And, you know, Windows Phone 8, I think we've commented before on the podcast, is when things, you know, start to feel a lot more mature. But I would say the overriding impression I got of the hardware is it felt more mature than the Lumia 800, the 710 and the 900. And, you know, that's the impression I got from the hands-on time that I had. And I think you can see that also in the specifications and just, you know, when you look at some of the images and the videos that we've got on the site.
One of the things that we can never do just looking at the pictures, Rafe, is what do they feel like in the hand? I mean, obviously, they can take some wonderful PR shots of getting the really curvy surfaces and everything. And we're told that the 920 certainly has the curve like the 800 had. What are these physically like?
Okay, well, let's start with the 920. You know, think about the Lumia 800, the kind of the curves on that. And then you think about the size of the Lumia 900. Combine those together and you've got something that's quite close to the 920. There's actually more tapering at the top and the bottom of the device, but it's that same fabular design language that we first saw on the Nokia N9. But, you know, I took the opportunity, I had the Nokia Lumia 900 in my left hand and the 920 in my right hand, and the 920 feels significantly more comfortable. You know, it's because it's got those rounded edges and the, you know, the 2.5D curved glass. And it does make a big difference. And it just feels like it's had, you know, that extra bit of refinement, which isn't surprising when you consider the timeline of these devices. And I was really impressed by the 920. You know, it is a really top quality device. I mean, Nokia talked about the fact they'd actually made it even more robust and it's even more scratch worthy. And, you know, that's a good thing because I think it's, you know, for those who've owned an 800 or a 900, you know, for more than 6 months, they probably will notice that the device is, they do tend to pick up a few scratches, and so it's good to hear that they, you know, it's better in the 920. You know, the proof will be in the pudding, of course. But just that immediate reaction when I picked up the first device, yes, this is nice. This is a refinement because the design is make no mistake about it, very similar, but it, you know, it feels like a much bigger difference than the pictures actually suggest.
Rafe, just a couple of questions. First of all, the Lumia 920, it's 4.5-inch device. After people like us are used to using, say, the Nokia N8 or Lumia 800, is 4.5 inches a little too big? And also, given everything that's riding on this, even though it's not that simple, what was the mood in the hall like from all the people that you talked to? How did people feel about what was going on today?
Well, starting with the size issue, I think probably the best comparison to make is with the Lumia 900 because it's essentially the same size of that from the front profile, despite the fact it's actually got 0.2 inches bigger on the screen. You know, it's a slightly smaller bezel around it. And that in itself is, you know, pretty impressive. And that's also, you know, the curved glass and the curved edges coming in there, whereas, you know, they kind of had to squeeze the 900 a bit in time terms. So if you're used to using a 900, the 920 doesn't feel any bigger than that. We've talked in the past about the 800 versus 900 in terms of size. Yes, you know, it is bigger, and it's bigger than the N8 as well. I've been using the 900 for the last month or so, you know, having been on the 800, and I have actually got used to it. So I don't think it's a big jump. But there, for some people, you know, 4.5 inches may feel a bit big, but actually it's kind of the 4-inch size. If that's too big for you, so will this be. You know, 4.5 inches suggests it's bigger than it actually is. But I guess that's why you've also got the 820, which, I mean, is very similar in size to the 800, despite the fact it's, again, a little bit bigger. And so you've got that choice there. So I don't think size is really a big issue here. And you know, it does come back to that kind of the curves on it. It makes it feel smaller than it actually is. And I would say, if anything, the 920 feels slightly smaller than the 900 in the hand because of that kind of refinement of the design. In terms of the mood in the hall, it's kind of always difficult to comment on this because to a certain extent you're in a bubble, but there was, you know, a positive vibe. And you know, of course, there's some people going, oh, no, not enough. And some people going, absolutely fantastic. But I think the interesting point was the way Nokia presented things. They talked about innovations with kind of consumer friendly brands, you know, PureView and some of the other innovations in terms of the screen as well, Pure Motion HD Plus, and all of those were demonstrated, and then we had a chance to go and see them in the demo area, and you really could see the difference. Now, you know, partly that's good demoing, but partly it's because they were really there. And so I think most people came away quite impressed, and certainly the feeling seemed to be that, you know, Nokia had produced good devices, and the question now wasn't about whether the devices were good enough. It was, you know, how do you then get them into the right channels? How do you do the marketing? And, you know, they will stand up well against the competing devices. You know, we'll have to wait and see what happens once consumers get their hands on them. But, you know, Nokia did enough to sort of really stand out. You know, there's the wireless charging as well. You know, that got quite a bit of excitement. A lot of people were looking at that as a demo. It's not new technology, but the way that it had been implemented and presented was all done very slickly. And it was creating a consumer experience that you go, yes, I can really see myself using that. You know, there weren't any caveats about it. We'll get onto that later. So as a result, there was quite a positive impression. And certainly there were a lot of Nokia people with smiles on their faces. And, you know, thinking back to Nokia World 2 years ago, when, you know, OPK had gone as CEO and it was all a bit doom and gloom. And then, you know, the Lumia 800 last year, you know, there was excitement then, but there was definitely acknowledgement there's more work to do. And so this time round, it's almost, you know, a completion of that first stage of cycle. You know, there's an acknowledgement that Nokia's in, you know, its sales haven't been great. It's in a bad place. But this is, you know, the beginning of perhaps the next chapter of the story.
Now, the next chapter, of course, is going to be led by the 920, it's positively identified as the flagship device. So we're going to concentrate on the tech that was on show on that. There is some interesting stuff in the 820 as well, and we will highlight the differences as we're going along. Steve, as the resident camera expert, to be honest, though, anybody standing next to me is a resident camera expert. PureView. Wasn't this all meant to be 41 megapixels, 2-inch diameter lenses, massive bulges? What's it doing in this svelte little yellow thing running Windows Phone?
Well, the world previously knew as PureView was actually PureView Phase 1, according to Nokia. And I can kind of see where they're coming from. Now, assuming that people, I know, used to the Windows Phone world, they may not even have heard of the Nokia 808 PureView over on the Symbian world. So let's leave that to one side. That involved a thing called pixel oversampling and a massive sensor and using software photography effectively to pull out a better image. For Phase 2 of PureView, Nokia's branding terms, they've turned to optical stabilization and still a software tricks as well. So essentially in the 920, we've got an 8-megapixel camera that's mounted in a MEMS, microelectrical mechanical system framework that's driven by a gyroscope. So the gyroscope detects the movement as you're wiggling the phone around, as your hand's shaking while you're taking the shot in low light conditions. And that feeds information back to this sensor loop that runs 500 times a second. And it just sends minute voltages to these MEMS systems, which then move the camera appropriately so that the actual camera lens and optical assembly stay exactly where they were in time and space, which is a really neat trick. The upshot of all this is that you don't need xenon flash necessarily. You can get away with what they call a short duration high pulse LED flash. Apparently they're brightest ever and shortest duration. So they've got that plus this optically stabilized assembly, which means that you can take photographs in lower light that should come out crisper and less blurry. Now, of course, you can't do anything about the subjects moving. So if I'm taking a photograph of Ewan down the pub, if he scarpers off halfway through the shot and to get another pint, he's going to be a blur. But assuming you're taking a photograph of people who are posing or static subjects in low light, then this, for normal users who are not, you know, professional photographers, people like you, Ewan, you'll actually get better results in most light conditioning. And I think this is quite impressive. So this is all part of PureView Phase 2. We've got the full details up on the site in an article called What's in the PureView on the Lumia 920. Do go and read that. I break down other interesting facts, including the fact that for the very first time in a Nokia phone, it's got a backside illuminator sensor, which means it's more sensitive and can process light more efficiently, along with an f2.0 aperture. Add all of that up. Yes, this means better low-light photographs for the average user, and that has to be a good thing, I think.
Yeah, I think it's for the low-light performance. I'm really itching to get my hands on this, actually more than the 808 PureView, because I think even the camera in the Lumia 800 is an excellent camera, provided there's enough daylight. I think it's really the low light environments that really separate the great cameras from the best cameras. So so everyone understands, but because everyone's seen the 808 PureView, and we associate that with big resolutions that are oversampling down to an 8 or 5 megapixel image. That's not what is happening here. The PureView moniker in this sense is relating to stabilization. So it's kind of like the Marvel Avengers films. We've got the first film with the oversampling. We've got a second film with the stabilization. And at some point, we'll have the Avengers Assemble camera phone. But it's got all of this, presumably.
Well, they Nokia are very clear to call it Phase 1 and Phase 2. And the two aren't necessarily in a particular order. They are simply complementary technologies. They're two different ideas, two different ways of getting better photographs inside a phone camera that's fairly small. And you can see each has its pros and cons. The 808's camera is pretty large and there's a pretty big bulge. Okay, that's a big con against that technique. So they've gone to Phase 2, which is a different idea, a different way of getting better photographs, but which can be done in a normal-sized camera module that goes in a fairly thin smartphone. So different pros and cons. As a semi-pro photographer, I think I'd always edge towards the 808. And but for the man in the street, much like, you know, Edolf back on Symbian, with extended depth of field, you know, a way that's pitched at the average user, not at the person who thinks they know how to take photos, I think this PureView Phase 2 might be just the thing. So yeah, full marks from me.
Yeah, I think Steve's hit the nail on the head there, in that, you know, the ultimate camera phone is still the 808 in terms of, you know, in one sense, when you're dealing with cameras, it's actually the optical sensor size, you know, that's the most important factor. But, you know, mobile phones is a compromise because of the physical size. So if you like normal people, and you might say this is the difference between a DSLR and, you know, a point and shoot camera, you know, this optical stabilization technology almost gives better results for the people who, you know, like to take pictures with point and shoot, and typically that's what you're doing with a camera phone. You know, you're grabbing an image quickly, and yes, it has big benefits in low lights. It also has, you know, benefits, you know, further upscale, even when you're in good lighting conditions. You know, I saw some example pictures, you know, taken, you know, of moving people, for example, and it worked well there as well, because I think anyone who's used a camera phone will have come across blurry pictures. And basically, this technology fixes that regardless of whether it's low light or whether it's high light. I mean, I've been using the 808 and I still get problems with blurry pictures on that because, you know, unless you're on a tripod, it can be quite hard to get it exactly right. So it's really forgiving as a camera. I mean, I tried this out, and actually what I'd say, it's pretty difficult, if not impossible, to take a bad picture. I was really surprised and really quite impressed. The one thing that Steve didn't really touch on was the video performance. In some ways, that was the most impressive demo, you know, because typically when you're taking video with a smartphone, it ends up being quite jerky. It goes up and down as you're moving along, especially if you're walking. But even if you're standing still, it's really hard to, you know, get things static. You have to put it on a tripod. And some people would have seen kind of the teaser video with someone riding on a bike, and it would look very smooth. And actually, in some ways, it's quite weird. You don't believe you're looking at, you know, camera phone video footage. It's like it's on the Steadicam. And, you know, we have seen examples that hacked together where someone's created a Steadicam, you know, caddy for a camera phone. But this is, you know, generally from handheld stuff. And, you know, you get rid of all the wobbles you typically get in smartphone video. And it really is quite uncanny the way you look at it. And actually, I had this demo to me. And, you know, the demo was actually shaking the phone from side to side visibly. And then we'll play it back, and it was perfectly smooth. And you sort of, you do a double take because it really does make an enormous difference. And I would say, you know, it's as big as the difference you got, looking at the original 808 PureView in terms of the getting rid of the noise reduction. It's something, as soon as you see it, you go, wow, that's really impressive. And, this is, for me, it's right up there with the 808 in terms of a bit of innovation that will make a big difference to the way that people use cameras. And, you know, until we get our hands on it and can test it ourselves, of course, you know, this all comes with a caveat. But, you know, there were some live demos in terms of taking low light conditions in the demos, you know, not faked, you know, this, they actually took the pictures, showed the results, and, you know, several demo videos. And I was really, you know, quite impressed. So I think before this event, if someone had, you know, said, oh, it's not going to be like the 808, it's not going to be, you know, the oversampling, it's going to be something else, we'd all gone, yeah, it's, you know, PureView in name only. No, this is PureView, and actually it really gets the point across strongly that for Nokia, PureView isn't about any one particular technology. It's about, you know, a mark that says to a consumer, this is going to be a great camera on your phone. And, you know, it does combine several things. And it's worth stating, you know, Steve talked about the hardware elements of the optical image stabilization. There's a lot of very clever algorithms in there as well. And they're proprietary to Nokia, as is obviously the hardware bit itself. So it is going to be quite hard for a competitor to come along and replicate this. And so, you know, that's important from a hardware differentiation point of view. And so I think it's probably going to be fair to say, you know, amongst your kind of standard 8-megapixel, you know, camera phones, all of a sudden the 920 is going to be the best one you can buy.
Yeah, just to quickly an answer to David's question, will all the Avengers assemble in one place? will we at some point see a phase one, a PureView with a, you know, a massive sensor and the software photography oversampling, plus having this optical stabilization? Not as such, because that much bigger camera module is much heavier, of course, and you can't then move it around as fast enough to do the optical stabilization. But I think we will see at some point, Ewan, don't worry, I'm coming to an end. I think at some point we will see perhaps a 21 megapixel sensor, smaller than the 808, but big enough to do that phase one PureView with the optical stabilization as well. I think we'll be looking at Mobile World Congress next year for that.
Yeah, and we should just add, I think, on this optical stabilization, that, you know, people have asked, is this available elsewhere? Well, not on a mobile phone, but it is actually in quite a lot of high-end cameras, you know, the DSLRs and things like that. But actually Nokia have taken a different approach. Steve talked about this and saying it's actually the whole kind of optical assembly that's on this stabilization. You know, it's a kind of a floating element, if you will, where it tends to be just a single lens within the DSLR and other high-end cameras. So actually this will outperform the optical image stabilization in kind of the high-end cameras, because they're able to do almost more with it. So it's actually one of the very few occasions where the camera phone technology, having it in a small module, is actually an advantage and is enabling, you know, you to do something that wouldn't be possible in a big DSLR. Because if you think about the size of a lens on, you know, a high-end camera, you know, you can't have that moving about. It wouldn't work. And so it's a really clever approach by Nokia. They're, you know, rather than sort of going, there's all these things we can't do because of the limitation of the physical size, they said, how can we use this to our advantage? And, you know, for me, in some ways, this was probably the cleverest bit of innovation that came out of, you know, this announcement.
Yeah, just very quickly, Ewan, just to give people out there who perhaps can't quite grasp in their minds exactly how this works, go and look at active suspension on cars. It's very, very similar to that. It, you know, on Formula One cars back in the 1980s, I'm sure it's in some production cars now. Look, active suspension, you'll be on the right track.
And Steve, it's actually even more than that, because nowadays active suspension just acts on the wheel. Those people who know Formula One will know that the first suspension that Lotus did in the 80s was actually they had the car suspending the entire bottom chassis, i.e. the entire car assembly was suspended there as well. And that's exactly the same as what the 920 is doing. It's suspending the entire car assembly, not just the floaty lens bit that happens nowadays on the DSLRs. So there we go. Steve, we've got our F1 stuff in sneakily as well, and Rafe's 6 hours away, so he can't edit it out. Right, that wasn't just the only thing that was pure about the launch. Rafe, Pure Motion HD Plus. It's not exactly saying it's Retina, is it? But this is Nokia doing the same sort of interesting stuff with screen tech.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, in a sense, Nokia have always done innovation in their products, but they've never been very good at labeling specifically. You might think about clear black display. I mean, I never think they made very much of that, and they probably should have done. And in a sense, this is clear black display plus some other bits and pieces. And there's actually a couple of pieces of technology in this. And You know, the Pure Motion is the kind of overreaching brand, and we can expect that to appear in other devices just as PureView has. And the HD Plus is actually a reference to the fact that the resolution of the screen of this device is just a little bit extra than 720p. I think it's an extra 48 pixels or so.
I think it's enough to do the top menu bar while you're watching HD.
Yes, exactly. And so what's in here? Well, there's, again, the clear black display, but there's also some added elements. It's actually an adaptive screen in sunlight. And so what it will do is actually change some of the intensity and the colours, so it remains readable even in really bright sunlight conditions. So there's actually the polarising layers plus this kind of variance in what's happening with the screen. So that's good. So it means it will be visible more of the time. But I think in some ways the more interesting part of it is actually the technology of the screen allows for faster response times when you're changing a pixel. And typically you're talking about 21 milliseconds or so for a screen pixel to go up to full luminance. On this device, we're talking about 8 milliseconds, and there are some with 60 milliseconds out there. So this is why they're saying it's kind of a 50% improvement over the competition. What does that actually mean? Well, when you're scrolling through things, it will appear much smoother. When you're watching video, things will sort of pop a bit more. They'll be brighter, and you won't get that kind of, you know, that fuzziness, if you like, you sometimes get in video. And, you know, often people talk about watching videos on 60 frames per second. That's always a bit pointless because, you know, the current screen technology doesn't keep up with that. This just about would, so it does raise some interesting use cases there. And there's also another element to all of this, and it's actually to do with the screen technology, and it's enabling you to use the phone screen when you're wearing gloves or with the back of your nail or something like that, as well as the usual finger touch, which, of course, is from the conductivity of your skin contact. And I think actually the last of those in some ways is the biggest impact on users, because there's, you know, people who live in cold environments will be happy to know that they can use gloves, but there are plenty of people, you know, long nails or who just prefer to use the back of their nail for something, will be able to use this. And actually this is technology that's been licensed from Synaptics, and the way it's working, it's actually an adaptation of the hover technology that has been around for a while, but actually it's taken right down near the surface. And so effectively there's two modes. There's kind of the finger mode and then the nail or the glove mode. And both seem to work equally well. I tried this out. And, you know, you should do a double take, because I'm so used to, you know, these capacitive touchscreens requiring a finger touch. The fact it was working without it was really something of a revelation. And it kind of comes back to a theme that Nokia had throughout the presentation was, you know, when we're doing innovation, we want to, you know, do things that actually make a difference to users, that, you know, make it easier to use the device, make it more enjoyable. And I actually asked Kevin Shields in an interview I had with him, you know, about, you know, how do you come to these innovation decisions? And that was kind of the explanation. Actually, hand in hand with that was, you know, I asked, why doesn't it have things like HDMI out or FM transmitter? And he said, well, you know, we don't know how to do these technologies. We've, you know, had them on previous devices, but, you know, our consumer research found that they weren't being used very much. And I think anyone who's had one of those devices will probably be familiar with that. You know, in the HDMI out, you may use a couple of times and then sort of forget about it for a long time. And, you know, we're talking, people listening to this podcast about smartphone geeks, I'm sure there's also an audience out there who use it a lot, but I think most of us would acknowledge it's probably not the most commonly used feature. So that was kind of an interesting shift in attitudes. And this whole, you know, Pure Motion display, in terms of what it looks like and feels like, yes, it looks really great. It's always a bit difficult to judge these things. I mean, I tried scrolling up and down, and yes, it looked less blurry. You know, I compared it actually with a Lumia 900, and actually kind of the interesting thing was 920 actually scrolled a lot quicker, and it almost felt like the 900 was deliberately slowed down to avoid the blurring problem. It's also brighter as a screen. In terms of nits, I think it's around 600, so that's, you know, again, the brightest HD screen that we've seen on any smartphone. The response time is quicker, and so, you know, if you're looking at the current smartphones, how competitive it is, this is the best screen on the market, full stop.
Yeah, I think this Pure Motion technology will be a really great thing. The Windows Phone devices that I've used already, they stand out from other phones because of the screen's refresh rate, how many frames per second they re-render the user interface. The fact that they've gone beyond that is brilliant, although I think, unfortunately, they did let themselves down a little bit in how they were explaining this in the press event, because they really underplayed, and it was the most obtuse explanation of what it was, so much so that it, I think anyone who follows me on Twitter will remember that I was saying, I think Jo Harlow is talking about frames per second, but she isn't using those words. And I think compare that to when the Google guys were doing the Jelly Bean presentation and they did the Project Butter demonstration. Compare that to Nokia's. But, I mean, Nokia should have been doing something like that to make it really clear. This is what we're doing. You are getting more frames per second, but it's a metric that has gone up, and it's going to make it look and feel so much better.
I think, though, David, you've not been around at previous Nokia launches from many, many years ago, when you had 2 hours of people going on like this with their exciting... You know, for me, this was one of the most energetic Nokia launches that I've seen for a long time. Kevin Shields really knows how to work up a crowd, and American playing to American audience is subtle, but I think will play very well. Jo Harlow does have that air of an English school teacher, but for some reason, America's like Emma Thompson as well. So I think it will have went down really well. And yet, you know, comparatively to the rest of the market, maybe they weren't shouting a huge amount, but they said, look, this is Pure Motion HD Plus, it's really good. This is Pure View, it's really good. This is actually a step change for Nokia. Stephen Elop talked right at the start about, you know, he was challenging Nokia. He was telling Nokia to think different, to take risks. And I think that the presentation department has taken some risks. I mean, Rafe, you've been at some of those wonderful delights with Ansi Vanjoki and OPK. This was far from the monotone that we would normally get from Nokia.
Yeah, that's absolutely right, Ewan. I mean, I've been to more Nokia presentations than I can probably remember, and this has certainly been, I think, a lot more focused in terms of the detail on the product and what the experiences that are important are, but also, you know, the energy and partly... it is about having an American presenter or Canadian or British in the case of Stephen Elop and Jo Harlow. And, you know, it does make a difference. And holding it in New York is almost a kind of a signature of that. And I think it worked really well. And there was sort of just that underlying buzz about the product. It did help that you had some really good products to talk about. Just going back to something David said about frames per second, I think the important thing to understand about Pure Motion is it's about a lot more than just that. I mean, it's screen tech that is significantly better than what's gone before. I mean, you will always have to take these things with a pinch of salt, but it certainly looks absolutely gorgeous. And, you know, without going down to the lab and measuring things, you know, difficult to put numbers on that. So you kind of have to take Nokia at their word. But it did look very impressive. And as I say, you know, it is several things. It's, you know, the intensity of the screen in terms of, you know, how much light it's kicking out. But it's the response time on these individual pixels, you know, when they're changing from one thing to another. You can imagine that, you know, 8 milliseconds as opposed to 21 milliseconds does make a difference. And it's, as I say, avoiding this blurring thing. And it doesn't actually matter how many frames per second your operating system is capable of doing. If you don't have a screen that's capable of, you know, matching that, there's no point in doing so. And sort of your back of the envelope calculations suggest that, you know, most operating systems, you know, with their current screen technology, 30 frames per second is probably the point at which you won't notice any difference, even if they do increase the screen technology. That's a bit difficult to judge, but with this, you will notice it. And so in one sense, you're right, David, it will, you know, show off Windows Phone better than it ever has been before, because we know that Windows Phone is capable of these quite high, you know, screen frame rates. So I think that's probably why they didn't explain it in those terms. Because it's not just about that. It's actually about the capability of the screen, and that has, you know, several dimensions. It's about the outdoor visibility, which I think always gets underplayed. People use their phone all the time, and they use it outdoors, they use it in sunlight, and it makes a big difference if you can actually see it. And, you know, as I said, this sort of this glove or this back of the nail mode, and, you know, that's a really big deal. You know, this is the first smartphone in the mainstream that's kind of had this technology. There has been some implementation before, but it didn't work terribly well. You know, and if you think this was, you know, any other manufacturer, this would be a really radical breakthrough. But actually, it was just one more piece of, you know, the product presentation, you know, because a lot of people were focusing on the PureView camera, or, you know, the brighter, more responsive display, or the wireless charging. And actually, you know, the way you interact with a phone, you know, let's face it, touching the phone is something you do more than anything else. And suddenly with this 920, you've actually got a new way to do it. And it's not so much a new way to do it. The thing is, you know, when we're interacting with a phone, we're adapting to it, you know, when we're touching the screen. The fact you have to take off your glove is not a good thing. You know, you want it to work with you. And I think The difference is this phone is adapting to you. I mean, that's the language that Nokia was using. I'm kind of reluctant to just, you know, parrot the presentation, but I think they have a fair point there. You know, that is the most fundamental interaction you have with the phone. Why were we having to sort of do something different in order to fit in with the phone?
Yeah, and I actually think that is an amazing feature, and it's probably something that is something else that is probably going to get sadly underplayed, because people just won't even expect something like that. But that is a real killer feature when you think that when you look at all the accessory shops, there's things like styluses and capacitive tipped gloves. The fact that you have something that you can use with your gloves on. I mean, Kevin Shields actually got up on stage and had skiing mitts on and was touching his screen, and it just worked.
Yes, I think that's right, David. I mean, the way I would summarise this is saying that the very best innovation in, you know, any consumer electronics is the one you don't really notice when it's there, because it just fits in with the way you use the phone. But as soon as you take it away, you really notice its absence. And you know, this is the kind of thing when you buy this phone, if you suddenly got a phone that didn't work with gloves on or the back of the neck, you really, really noticed it, and it would really frustrate you. But I guess we should, you know, probably move on, because there's got some more innovation to come to. But I know we also wanted to talk about kind of the location and the mapping elements in this podcast.
Indeed, we do. So, I mean, these are elements that we have seen before. Nokia Maps, Nokia Drive, Nokia Transport, and City Lens were the sort of four bullet point features in here. And again, the augmented reality, the City Lens, was something that Nokia played up quite a lot here. It was played up in Joe Harlow's sort of introduction to the phone. It was shown again with Kevin Shields, and then Joe Balfore, who came on, was actually showing it inside Windows Phone 8 as well. And again, you know, this is part of the technology and software that Nokia's contributed to Windows Phone 8, and we're really seeing that it's quite a deep hook into the system here, Rafe. Navigation is a key component, not just of the Lumia, but of Windows Phone 8 as a whole.
Yeah, that's right, Ewan. I mean, the big focus here was on City Lens, but there were just a few hints about how, you know, the location platform is going to work, and it was noticeable that it's all Nokia-led, and what's going to happen is, you know, you're going to have kind of a seamless experience between Maps and Drive and City Lens. And for example, Maps is going to get an augmented reality mode that, you know, when you're navigating along, you'll be able to tilt up and you'll get the kind of the augmented reality view. I was kind of surprised that City Lens got such attention, you know, because it's an app that's already out there. It's just come out of beta. It's been available for a while now. But again, it was one that actually got people talking, you know, saying, oh, this is really quite impressive. This is the first time I've seen it done in a convincing way. For me, actually, the bigger message around this was actually it's the Nokia location platform is maturing and it's going to be available on Windows Phone in a way it just hasn't been up till now. We've kind of had it in piecemeal bits as individual applications. And I think anyone that's used it on a Symbian device will have found some frustrations with that. And even on a Symbian device, it wasn't always very well joined together. This is going to be deeply integrated into the platform. It will be used by third parties. You know, you'll be able to seamlessly move between Drive into Maps, you know, the various types of navigation, and then other sort of mapping elements as well. And they'll be launching a third party applications. We didn't actually get a full demo of this, but there's clearly a little bit more to come on that. So I suspect that's something we'll hear at the kind of next event when Microsoft is going to do some more details on Windows Phone 8. But it is a very big chunk of technology that Nokia is kind of contributing to the platform. And I think it's going to make the whole experience of using these location services, you know, sort of more intuitive, more seamless, rather than sort of dropping into an application. It will just be there when you need it. And, you know, the augmented reality mode, I've actually been using it a little bit in New York to help find myself way around. It really does work great when you're in a new city for, you know, just finding places around, you're getting a bit of information. And with the 900 and with these phones announced today, you've got the gyroscope sensor. So it's, you know, it's extra accurate, you know, when you're pointing, you don't have to hang around. And so, yeah, it is a big deal. And I think, again, it's something that gets slightly underestimated. We got kind of blasé in a way with the Nokia devices. You get this Nokia Maps, you get Nokia Drive. You know, other platforms are kind of playing catch up here. And we just assume it's there when you buy a Nokia device. You know, you will get free Maps, you will get free SatNav. And now they're looking at what else they can do. And having it as an integral part of the platform, it's actually, in some ways, it's going to be one of those bits that, again, it's just there and people will appreciate it. And when it's not there, they might go, oh, yeah, I kind of like that.
Yeah, I was surprised, I mean, that it was quite so blatant that they were mentioning CityLens so many times in the press conference. And it's a good app. Although I have to admit, I've tried using it in my city, in Hull, and Ewan, shush. It shows lots of places, but it didn't show anywhere that close to me, and it hasn't been that useful. And I was surprised that they didn't talk as much about, say, the public transport navigation. Joe Haller touched on it a little bit, but I'd say it's at least as much, if not more, useful than the CityLens. The thing that really made an impression on me is that because with Windows Phone 8, all the OEMs have got Nokia Maps now, so effectively the family silver's gone in that kind, in a loose sense. The point is that everyone has got the same mapping technology now. Everyone's got Nokias, which is probably the best to get. So Nokia is still having to struggle to differentiate themselves. They're having to differentiate their Nokia Maps from everybody else's Nokia Maps. So I think that they've cited CityLens as something of a mapping hero application, because I think maybe I'm being a little bit disanthropic here, but it's a bit of an ooh-shiny effect because it's just so visually interesting to look at.
I mean, to be fair, it does make for a very good demo in that kind of presentation, and it does have a wow factor about it. It's still augmented reality, and that, you know, there are questions about, you know, whether it's straightforward to use, whether it's actually practical. But, you know, Nokia have kind of addressed that by, you know, it will appear when you swing up as opposed to having a map view when you swing down. And, you know, they've made it as user-friendly, as intuitive as possible. But, yes, I mean, we'll have to see how this plays out. I mean, I think it makes sense to have mapping as an integral part of the platform. The benefits you get from that kind of outweigh it. And, you know, Nokia have plenty of other places where they're differentiating. In one sense, you know, they needed it because last time out, the hardware was, you know, very similar. You know, there wasn't much differentiation there. So it made sense to do a bit of software differentiation. Of course, you can do that later in the day. This time around, there's going to be more hardware differentiation. There will be the same software differentiation. Of course, it'll be interesting to see how exactly it's implemented. You know, will there be kind of a Nokia premium version, as is kind of suggested with this CityLens technology? And I suspect there's more apps to come in that frame. And, you know, how's it going to be branded? So I think the jury is out on this one in terms of the impact. I mean, I think from a strategic point of view, it's absolutely the right thing to do. But you're right, there is going to be some impact. You know, people will be able to buy a Samsung device or an HTC device and kind of get the full mapping experience. But to be fair, it's becoming an integral part of smartphone platforms. And I think it's better for Nokia to have their technology in rather than having Microsoft replicating something. I mean, they'd be licensing the Navtec map data anyway. And I think Nokia having this kind of element of control is probably quite good, especially given the amount they have given up in switching to Windows Phone. They have less control over their software destiny. And that was evident at this event because, you know, in terms of the demos, it was looking at the start screen and a few of the key experiences like lenses. And this is the idea: when you're in the camera application, you can bring up a lens and it's a third-party application that fully integrates and takes over the camera viewfinder. And there were ones that, you know, for removing people in a crowd or removing objects, like, you know, you'd be in a street and you'd be able to take out the car, or there's one that, you know, kind of does a bit of animation, cinema scope it was called, and be applying filters Instagram style and all of that. That was demoed, and a few other bits and pieces. But apart from that, everything else, you know, they were kind of keeping it under wraps, and that's because, you know, we haven't heard the final details of Windows Phone 8 yet. So I kind of thought that was kind of an interesting illustration of, you know, the fact that Nokia wasn't entirely in control of their own event in one sense. Not a bad thing necessarily, because actually the focus here was on the hardware and the innovation there, and there was, you know, a lot to talk about and plenty to shout about there.
Yeah, and I suppose the other thing that they had to shout about was their fourth major takeaway, which is that of wireless charging. Now, the Palm Pre, as I seem to recall, many years ago, did have the ability to do this, but you had to buy an additional back cover. Now, that's a strategy that the Lumia 820 is using. But Rafe, or anybody else who's listening, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is the first smartphone that has wireless charging built into the handset at point of sale.
It's not the first one that's built in. There's actually a whole bunch of them out in Japan using this Qi standard that Nokia is using. But it's probably one of the first mainstream ones in Western Europe. I mean, you mentioned the Pre with the touchstone there. That was using a slightly different technology. Nokia's using Qi, and that's an industry standard that's kind of an industry body, kind of come about in the same way as NFC and Bluetooth. Someone did the research in the lab, and there's since been a industry body, and Nokia is a member of that, so it's not surprising to see them choosing it. But it is already, you know, quite well established in Japan. Most phones on the Docomo network actually have that, and there's various, you know, furnitures and in cafes, the sort of thing that Nokia is actually talking about. They talk about partnerships with a coffee shop and with Virgin Atlantic and how they're going to put these wireless charging mats into these locations. But they also produced a whole bunch of accessories. And the way it works basically is you take your phone, you put it down on a mat or, you know, a place, and it will charge using inductive charging. And it's kind of like magic in a way. You know, everyone has heard about wireless charging, but it's always been it's a bit fiddly to use. And we'll talk about how it's been implemented in a minute. But as you say, on the 920, it's built in. On the 820, it's going to be on the kind of they have it, the exchangeable covers, kind of harking back to Nokia Express on covers of a long time ago. The covers are going to be relatively cheap because the coil that is used to do this inductive charging isn't a particularly expensive component. We're probably talking a couple of dollars. I think it's a clever way to do it, honestly, on the 820. You get the choice of having the different colours if you want, and on the 920 having it built in. I would expect in the future this kind of wireless charging to just become another part of the phone, just in the same way that we expect it to have Bluetooth, we expect it to have Wi-Fi and a GPS. But what kind of impressed me about it was that we've had, you know, this wireless charging around for a while, and we've had it, as you say, on the Pre, we've had it on other devices, but it's always been a bit fiddly to use. The way Nokia have implemented it in their charging mats, you don't actually have to put the device down in a specific orientation or a specific area. You can actually just sort of throw it on the pad, and as long as the kind of middle bit is overlapping in one orientation or other, it will work fine. And there's a desktop stand as well, and there's various third-party ones as well. And, you know, it just works. And yes, you're going to have to pay an extra cost to get this wireless charging, but I think maybe they've just got the timing right, and you know, Nokia will probably now be known as the company that did wireless charging first, and I would fully expect others to follow.
For at least a week.
Yes, indeed.
David?
Well, it'd be interesting to...
Put your physics hat on. Induction. Does it really work? I mean, are we going to lose battery cycles on this? What is the magic behind this?
It really works. The magic behind this, it's the same way that electricity generators work, actually. You have one thing, you have one coil. Well, if you have a coil that's carrying a current, it will create a magnetic field going through it in the same pattern that a bar magnet would. And whenever you apply a magnetic field to another wire that isn't carrying a current, it will induce a current. So you can, at a distance, with no contact, do something to a piece of wire to give it energy to make electricity flow. And there's all sorts of places where this works. If you've made like brush motors in your physics class, it's the same sort of thing there. The thing that really impresses me is how they've made this work, because these things are very, very, very sensitive to getting the frequencies right and each coil being tuned to each other. And what Rafe was saying is about orientation not mattering. You do, I mean, to get the best results, you do actually have to have the coils in both devices lined up. Now, in some things, I think just say, for example, there was the JBL speaker dock that we saw in the presentation. That actually has what Kevin Shields described as landing lights to make sure that you did get it in the right place. Whereas other devices, other charging plate devices, will actually have an array of coils. So wherever you put the phone down, the chances are you're going to have it lined up with one of the coils. And the really interesting thing about the Qi standard is that it isn't just two dumb coils, one transmitting a magnetic field and the other one being driven by the magnetic field. They actually do have a degree of digital communication. There is actually a 2 kilobit per second data stream between them. So actually the device that is being charged can even send a little message to the charger and say, oh, my battery's full now, you can stop charging me, which is going to save energy in the end, which is brilliant. I just can't wait for this to be more ubiquitous and to actually have these charging plates in tables in any restaurant or Starbucks or whatever that I go to.
I love that. 2 kilobit a second data transfer. I've learned something today, Rafe.
And just to reinforce what Dave was saying there, you know, it's getting the user experience right that is important here, because, you know, as I say, this technology has been around for a while, but it's been too fiddly to use. But this really is a case of, you know, you get your phone, you check it on the, you know, the charging plate. You don't have to be particularly precise. It does just work. And yes, it's lazy not plugging in a wire, but let's face it, it is easier doing it like this. And, you know, I'm sure they're going to sell quite a few of these. It's going to take a while before it really takes off. And of course, it's only going to be built into furniture in a few locations. But, you know, you have to start somewhere. And I think the thing that kind of caught my eye was there's actually a decent range of accessories that Nokia are launching with this. There's the kind of Nokia standing, the standard Nokia charging plate, which is basically kind of a rectangular puck with rounded ends that you just put the phone on. That works fine. Then there's the Lazy Boy, kind of a mat. Yeah. It looks a bit like a cushion. You put that on, that works fine. I can see that sort of working next to the sofa or next to your bed, maybe. Then there's the JBL speaker, which is both an NFC and Bluetooth speaker set that you tap it on to pair it and then to connect it to start playing music, but also with this wireless charging thing. And that kind of makes a lot of sense. You're in the home, you know, you want to listen to a bit of music, but you can charge your phone up at the same time. But in some ways, the one that caught my attention most was the desktop stand, you know, because these are actually quite popular. There's a lot of third-party accessories out there for doing desktop stands. And, you know, you're sitting at your office computer or your desk, you sit down, you put the phone on the desktop stand, and it starts charging. Makes a lot of sense. It's really easy to use. But there's just an added element that didn't get talked about in the presentation, but I thought, really clever idea. They put an NFC element into it, and it's not actually when you put your phone onto the stand. It's you actually tap the top of the phone to the bottom of the stand, and it will then automatically start an application of your choice. And so, for example, you walk into the office, you tap at the stand, you put it in place. Not only it's charging, it's then opened an application. That might be your email. It might be an alarm clock if you've got it next to your bed, or something else. And it was just that extra bit of attention to detail. I thought, yeah, that's really quite smart. And as I said before, I think Nokia have just got the timing right on this one. I mean, I am sort of coming out of the event bubble and thinking, well, maybe people won't, you know, spend extra on accessories and it may not be available. But there's no getting away from the kind of, it's just a really cool technology. You put your phone down on the surface and all of a sudden it beeps and the battery starts going up. I mean, how great is that?
And I will just say that a little bit of trivia that if you have a Lumia 800 or probably even a 900 and you're feeling a bit left out with all this, go to YouTube and search for Lumia 800 inductive charging. You will see a DIY project where someone takes a Palm Pre inductive charger, dismantles their Lumia 800, fits a charging coil, and at the end of the video declares that they never have to use the USB dot ever again. So you can have inductive charging on your Windows Phone 7 devices too.
Other options for completely and utterly destroying your warranty are available with your various listings, magazines, and search engines. There you go. It is magic. I think that's the four major points from the 920. So let's quickly swing over to the 820. We've already mentioned the back covers and the interchangeability there. Rafe, am I reading this right? The Lumia 820 does have microSD, but the 920 doesn't. Is that right?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. I mean, this is partly because the 920 has 32 gigabytes of mass storage, whereas the 820 has a lot less. I think it's 8 gigabytes. But I actually asked, you know, why not put microSD in the 920? And the answer came back, we didn't want to spoil the lines, the design of the 920, which I can understand, because let's face it, you know, the microSD cards are not a small, the slot, you know, would kind of be a blemish on the finish. But also it was the comment about the user research showed that people weren't using so much space as they used to. There was more stuff being stored in the cloud, and that does make sense with Windows Phone. You've got the SkyDrive integration, but also streaming music and video services. I'm sure there's some people screaming out there, but I want my microSD card slot. Yes, there are, you know, people who want that, but I can actually see that the majority of people probably aren't that bothered. I mean, it does make me wonder, you know, does this leave aside the people who are going to go and buy a 64 gigabyte iPhone and say, well, I can't have the Nokia because that doesn't have the capacity I want. But I think this is becoming less of an issue than it used to be. But in one sense, you know, you get a bit of choice here. You know, you can choose to have the 820. And in many ways, actually, the 820 feels like almost the kind of the more attractive mainstream device. I mean, it doesn't have the PureView camera, sadly. The camera on it's still pretty decent. It's a standard 8 megapixel Nokia one, and it has some of the elements in there. But pretty much most of the other innovations are there. We've mentioned the wireless charging, we've mentioned the screen technology, and it, you know, it's kind of a move on from the Lumia 800. It actually feels quite comfortable in the hand. I mean, I kind of like the idea of replaceable back covers. You know, you can change the color of your phone anytime you want, and of course it's still running Windows Phone 8 and all of that that is implied. So the Lumia 820, you know, it got mentioned right at the end of the presentation almost as an afterthought. But actually, I think this is a device that a lot of people are going to go, okay, yeah, that's the one I want. You know, it's not going to be quite so expensive, I would imagine. It's maybe a more pocketable size, more manageable size for many people. It has a lot of the key innovations, you know, the bits that will excite people, the exception being the camera, because clearly there is going to be some differentiation. You have to cut some things out. You know, the screen size physically is slightly smaller. But don't underestimate it. I think the 820, you know, is a refinement of the Lumia 800. It's not the same kind of design, but it still feels incredibly solid in the hand. You pick it up and you think, is this back cover really removable? And yes, they are. And it comes in a whole range of colors. I'm sure Ewan is going to like the purple one, for example. So it feels like, you know, a very solid device. And I think if, you know, Nokia produced that and come out with that, people would have been really impressed by that. They'd have probably complained a bit about the camera, but it's only put into shadow because it's being announced alongside the 920, which inevitably is going to be the flagship device and probably all the one that the geeks and people listening to the podcast will go, yeah, that's, you know, that's the ultimate device from Nokia for me in terms of, you know, the Windows Phone portfolio.
It's a bit like the Lumia 800 and the Lumia 710, which is a year ago, Rafe. And I've got a question for you, because the big differentiator for me there was that the 800 was fully sealed, you know, beautiful, etc. The 710 was a bit more cheaper and cheerful, but you could take the back cover off and you could change the battery, you could replace it when the battery got old. You've been talking about replaceable back covers for this 820. I'm kind of getting a bad feeling in my stomach that although you can take the back cover off, you can't actually change the battery. Is that right?
I'm just trying to remember, because I did look at this thinking Steve will not be impressed, or he will be impressed, but I can't remember which way round it is. So we'll try and check that out and mention it in the next podcast.
Okay.
I will say, just talking of batteries, that the 920 does have a 2000 milliamp hour battery, which Nokia says is the biggest they've ever put into a smartphone. And some of the screen technology we were talking about actually means that it'll use less power in the screen. And there's various other elements throughout the phone and sort of at low levels that improve that. And so actually Nokia was sort of suggesting there would be a noticeable improvement in battery life with these new devices, which I think a lot of people will welcome, particularly those coming from the Symbian world, where, you know, none of the Android, iPhone or Windows Phone devices really measure up to, you know, Symbian in terms of frugality when dealing with power. Again, we'll have to wait and see on that one. But it was interesting to see that getting a specific mention. And again, it ties back into, you know, things that consumers actually care about. They want their phone to last all day on a single charge.
And I think that is us, as Rafe starts to look at the sun slowly setting over the New York skyline. And we all look at the clocks going, oh, we've got a podcast to edit and it's after 10 and news night starting pretty soon. Rafe, any final impressions from New York?
Well, it was positive, and that's the big takeaway for me. You know, there's a lot of questions coming in. Are Nokia going to do enough? Absolutely, they've done enough. And, you know, actually for me, the challenge now is about the channel. That's, you know, how they're selling the device, which operators they partner with. They didn't announce availability or pricing. And I'm sure that's going to be mentioned on a lot of people's stories, because a lot of the rest of it is, you know, very positive about the innovation. Everyone likes to have a kind of the negative paragraph at the end, if you will. Was it a mistake? Maybe, but I suspect they want to save a bit more fire. You know, still having ongoing talks. I would suggest, based on the look I had at the device, it's certainly going to be into November before these become available. And, you know, it's ever so slightly ominous. You know, the only thing that got said was it will be available in select markets in Q4. So, you know, I would anticipate, similar to the Lumia 800, it will become available in a few countries, you know, sometime in Q4, November, possibly even December. But other people are going to have to wait a little bit longer to get their hands on it. Pricing, I don't think there'll be any big surprises there. It will be similar to the kind of the 900 and the 800 were last time round. It's then just going to be a question of subsidies and which operators get them. You know, are they going to be on multiple US operators, for example? You know, how's the kind of, they've already talked about doing, you know, specific deals with operators in European countries, doing more focused launches. We'll hear more about that in due course. I think it's, you know, we could talk about that a little bit, but until we get more detail, it's probably better to reflect on what's in the new hardware and the fact that there's some innovation there, that, you know, several bits have come together to create a Nokia device that has quite a few talking points, which I think is, you know, the first time that's happened for a while. You know, the 808 had the talking point about the camera, you know, the 800, 900, you know, first Windows phone devices. But Nokia successfully sort of said, these are the new innovations. It's not that they haven't been there before. They just haven't always communicated them very well. So that's the message I would take away. And we'll come back to this in future podcasts. There's quite a bit more to talk about. I'll have digested, you know, what I think of the device a bit more, looked through my notes. And there are some other bits and pieces that got mentioned in terms of apps and some of the camera lenses. I think the ones that people would have probably paid attention to is Angry Birds Roost. So, you know, Rovio has obviously got on board to do something there, and I'm sure that will be tied into the Windows Phone launch. And, you know, the other thing is kind of watch this space, because all the concentration really was on the Nokia hardware and design this time around. There was a little bit extra on Windows Phone 8. Yes, it's got a screenshot function, and yes, there's this camera lens that I talked about earlier in the podcast, but there's a lot more to come. And there is going to be another Microsoft event where it's kind of the formal unveiling of Windows Phone 8, where we'll probably hear a lot more about all the other bits and pieces. I understand the developer SDK is going to be available on an invitation basis on September the 12th. So we've kind of said it before, but there's actually more to come, and we haven't yet learned everything we're going to about Windows Phone 8, particularly around the service story, I think.
And to be fair, we haven't heard a lot about most of the smartphone market. In the period between the launch of these phones and us recording this podcast, the Droid Razr HD, the Droid Razr HD Max has been launched by Motorola. We have Amazon coming up with whatever they are doing with their Kindle tablets. We, of course, have Apple next week. There's bound to be stuff from the other partners as well. Samsung kind of brought up stuff at IFA, HTC are in stuff in the offing in the next 2 weeks as well. There's a huge amount of pieces being moved around on the chessboard that is the smartphone world, but Nokia have certainly made a very strong play. They still have some things left in reserve, but whether they are pawns, knights, or queens, we will know over the rest of the quarter and into the end of the year. The same with Microsoft as well. Kingmaker, castled, or just a lowly bishop. We will find all of that out as well. It only remains for me to thank everybody who's stayed up late to appear on the podcast. That includes David Gilson.
Thank you very much, Ewan, and thank you to everyone who's been listening, and thank you to everyone for staying up to record it.
Steve's already had his cocoa before we started it, so if we listen very carefully, we can hear him snoring. But thank you, Steve, when you listen back to this in the morning. And as it enters a nice, lovely 5 p.m. Manhattan evening, thanks also to Rafe Blanford.
Thank you, everybody. The jet lag's catching up a little bit, but I'm looking forward to having a bit of a look around New York. But you'll be hearing more from me with some hands-on impressions and some overreaching impressions in due course.
Yeah. and we appear to have Angry Birds Roost going off in the background with one of the piggies. I'm Ewan Spence. Thank you all, as always, for listening to the All About Windows Phone Insight podcast, www.allaboutwindowsphone.com. Comments and discussion already going on over the new handsets, new Windows 8 features, and there's an in-depth look at the PureView technology, as Steve said. Things we didn't mention in the podcast, the extra applications that Nokia are going to be supporting, and a whole bundle of other stuff. Go to the website, check the flow, check the news and editorial. You will find it all there. Right now, I'm going to not have my cocoa. I think I'm going to need coffee first. And we will catch you for the rest of the week and all the news that's happening in the world of smartphones and Windows Phone on the All About sites. Thanks for listening. Catch you soon. Ta-ra for now.